Haggai is an interesting little book. I don't recall ever hearing a sermon about it or a talk about it before. And I thought we would just look at it for a few minutes. It's the 37th book in the Old Testament, and it's one of the minor prophets. It's called a minor prophet, as I think we all know, because of its length, not because it's unimportant, but simply because it's quite short. It's actually about the length of a brochure. It takes about 5 minutes to read it. And Haggai is one of the three, some people call it the post-Babylonian prophets. The other two post-Babylonian prophets are Zechariah and Malachi. We might do a real quick review of a little history. There's history in this book. There is archaeology in this book. There is also some very practical applications for us today in this book. So the Israelites entered the Promised Land, and initially they were under the judges. Then they got some kings, and the first three kings were over the unified country. First Saul, then David, and then Solomon. And then the country was divided in two, a northern kingdom called Israel and a southern kingdom called Judah. Then Israel, the northern kingdom, was taken into captivity by the Assyrian Empire in about 735 BC. And Judah, the southern kingdom, was taken into captivity by the Babylonian Empire in 598 BC. After that, roughly 70 years transpired, and Persia conquered the Babylonian Empire. And the Jews were allowed to return to the Promised Land by the leaders of the Persian Empire. And not just them, but almost all the people that were captured by the Babylonian Empire were allowed to return by Cyrus the Great. He issued his decree in 538 BC. It's mentioned in Ezra chapter 1, the first four verses, where Ezra says, "In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and also put it in writing. Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever is among you of all his people, may his God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and rebuild the house of the Lord, the God of Israel. He is the God who is in Jerusalem, and let each survivor, in whatever place he sojourns, be assisted by the men of his place with silver and gold, with gold, woods, and with the beasts, besides free will offerings for the house of God that is Jerusalem." We found his general royal edict for this return of many different peoples from the new Persian Empire. It's called in English the Cylinder of King Cyrus. It was discovered in 1879, and it's now in the British Museum when it's not traveling around. Recently, the British Museum loaned it to Iran, which, of course, is basically where the old Persian Empire was. Its central headquarters, its capital, but generally it's in the British Museum. And pronouncement, however, this particular cylinder, it was just the general pronouncement, and it does not mention the Jews, but it was the pronouncement which allowed the Jews and many other groups of people to return to their original homes. So we have one of the proclamations that King Cyrus made about this return today due to archaeology. It's also mentioned the return in 2 Chronicles 36, verses 22 and 23. There it says, "Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and also put it into writing." The first wave of the return back to the Promised Land was 42,360 people. along with 7,337 servants. We read about this in Ezra chapter 2, verses 64 and 65, where Ezra says, "The whole assembly together was 42,360, besides their male and female servants, of whom there were 7,337, and they had 200 male and female singers." The foundation of the new temple was laid during the early stages of the return. Ezra mentions this in Ezra 5:16. "Then this Sheshbazzar came and laid the foundations of the house of God that is in Jerusalem, and from that time until now, it has been in building, and it is not yet finished." So, this small beginning that Ezra mentions here in Ezra 5 and 16, it was pretty much abandoned due to many factors, such as the surrounding people's opposition to it. And it was not to be started again for nearly 20 years. And then, once it was started again, it was completed in about 4.5 years. The Hebrew name for the prophet Haggai means festal. It's related to the Hebrew words that mean procession or festival. And he is mentioned outside of the book of Haggai in Ezra 6:14, where Ezra says, "And the elders of the Jews built and prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. They finished their building by decree of the God of Israel and by the decree of Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes, king of Persia." There are fragments of the document, there are copies of the original document of Haggai that have been found among the Dead Sea Scrolls, and those copies were made about 150 to 200 BC. Haggai is very well organized. It is for a very short book, but highly organized. It's divided into four speeches or lectures. And the speeches are dated precisely to the day, month, and year of the rule of the current ruler of Persia, Darius I. And Darius I ruled Persia from 522 to 486 BC, a very long reign for back at that time. And modern chronologists believe that they can date Middle Eastern history accurately to the day, using our current Julian calendar, back to about 600 BC at least. So we believe because Haggai gives us the exact day based upon the reign of Darius I of Persia, when he gave each of his four speeches or lectures, we believe today we can date it to the exact day that it was given using our own calendar. So chapter 1 that we had read already was given on August 29th, 520 BC. And then chapter 2 has the other three speeches. Speech 2 is chapter 2, the first 9 verses. And it's dated, we believe it occurred on October 17th, 520 BC. And then the last two speeches are the last part of chapter 2 from verse 10 to verse 19, which is December 18th, 520 BC. And then the fourth speech or lecture was verses 20 through 23, which was given on the same day. So speech 3 and speech 4, Haggai gave the speech on the same day, just different parts of the same day, on December the 18th, 520 BC. October, and then December, all in the same year of 520 BC. The first two speeches were addressed to Zerubbabel, the governor, and Joshua, the high priest. The third speech was addressed to the priests specifically, and all the priests, and the third speech was addressed to Zerubbabel only. And the primary message of Haggai is that the people of Judah need to get back to work and rebuild the temple, the second temple. And that is the basic message of Haggai. But another primary message is that God comes first. And stop worrying so much about everything else and put God first, and then everything else will fall into place. That is the primary message of Haggai. The temple had been robbed and destroyed about 80 years before by the Babylonians. and now they are struggling to rebuild it. They had already started it when they first arrived, and then they pretty much abandoned it, rebuilding it. And now Haggai is encouraging them to do that. Some other major topics in Haggai that apply to us today are Haggai talks about the continuing presence of God's Spirit with his followers. He talks about God's blessing of material prosperity on his followers. And he talks about the overthrow of the nations, those who do not follow him. Haggai encourages the people to finish rebuilding the temple. Like we talked about briefly already, there was opposition from neighboring groups around the Jews in this area that had caused them to be discouraged and to delay the building. But Haggai's message turned them around and motivated them to pick up their tools and continue the work they had started. And I won't reread chapter 1. We've already heard that, and that was in there. And they became very excited. They responded almost immediately to Haggai's message, and they were ready to go and pick up their tools and continue the work that they had started. God asked his people how they can live in luxury when his house was lying in ruins. So they were very concerned, as we heard in the reading earlier, about making their own houses very nice and making them actually luxurious. But they were neglecting the work of rebuilding the second temple. And so Haggai is trying to shame them and pointing out that God comes first. You're building your own houses is important, but God comes first. And you need to take up what you were doing. But the more people work for themselves, the less they had, because they did not put God first and ignored their own spiritual lives. So they were working very hard for themselves, and it was like there was a hole in the bag where they put their money, because the harder they worked for themselves, the less they had for themselves. And it was because they did not put God first and ignored their spiritual lives. And the same thing happens to me. If we put God first, then God will provide for our deepest needs in every area of our lives. But we have to put him first. That's the key, putting him first. If I put God in any other place, then my overall efforts will ultimately be futile. Caring only for my physical needs will ultimately lead to ruin. In verse 6, we have, you have sown much and harvested little. You eat, but you never have enough. You drink, but you never have your fill. You clothe yourselves, but no one is warm, and he who earns wages does not put them in a bag with holes. Because the people of Judah had not given God first place in their lives, their work was not fruitful or productive, and their material possessions did not satisfy. While the people of Judah concentrated on building and beautifying their own homes, God's blessing was withheld because they no longer put him first. Moses discussed this, and I'm not sure how much we want to read of this, but he talks about this in detail, this attitude which, when you don't put God first, things don't go well. In Deuteronomy 28, verses 38-45, he talks here, Moses talks about, you shall carry much seed into the field and shall gather in little, for the locust shall consume it. You shall plant vineyards and press them, but you shall neither drink of the wine nor gather the grapes, for the worm shall eat them. You shall have olive trees throughout all your territory, but you shall not anoint yourself with oil, for your olives shall drop off. You shall father sons and daughters, but they shall not be yours, for they shall go into captivity. The cricket shall possess all your trees and the fruit of your ground. The sojourner who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. He shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. All these curses shall come upon you and pursue you and overtake you until you are destroyed, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments and his statutes that he commanded you. They did not put God first, so all these bad things began to happen to them. So Judah's problem was confused priorities, and my priorities involving every area of my life are sometimes confused. I may rank some things higher on my list of priorities than God, but what is most important to me? Ranking God highest is most important to me. I should ask myself, where is God on my list of priorities? Haggai, of course, agrees with Jeremiah that one should not place a misplaced trust in the physical structure of the temple. Jeremiah mentioned this in Jeremiah 7 and 4. Do not trust in these deceptive words. This is the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. And also Zechariah mentions this too. Rather, Haggai summoned the people of Judah to a proper worship of God through obedience and service and putting God first and not in a heartless faith in a sacred building. Haggai would agree with his fellow prophet Zechariah that the people of Judah needed to have the attitude of reverence and humility and obedience to the law of God, and that God desires mercy, not sacrifice. We see this in Hosea 6 and 6, where Hosea says, "For I desired steadfast love and not sacrifice, the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings." Just like is said throughout the whole Bible, God desires obedience and love first, and not burnt offerings, not sacrifice. It's also mentioned in Micah by the minor prophet Micah, in Micah 6:8. "He has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God." And also it's mentioned in Zechariah 7, verses 4 through 10, but I think we'll skip that one. So the people obeyed Haggai's message, and the people began rebuilding the temple, as we see at the end of chapter 1. But they did delay 23 days. They were really excited about getting started, but they delayed 23 days. And it really doesn't give us any clues about why they delayed, but there's one interesting thing that we can maybe guess. It's a guess, but I think it might be right. We know the exact date of when Haggai gave his message, and it's right around harvest time. And so they probably may have delayed their temple starting to rebuild because they were involved in harvesting the grain in the fields and from the orchards and the fruit from the orchards. The delay might have been to allow everyone to complete this important, very important work of harvesting. While we need to put God first, you know, there are times when other things must be done too. And so while they were very excited to get started, they did have this 23-day delay. And it may have been well that they were in the middle of harvest, and they needed to complete this harvest before they could be able to feed their families during the coming period of time. So I need to place God first in my life, and then everything else will fall into place. And notice the people did respond very quickly to be rebuilding the temple very fast. How often do I ignore advice? How often do I accept advice but then don't follow through? You know, I say, that's a great idea, and then I don't follow through. The Judeans put their decision into action, and we see how that they followed through after they made this decision. Haggai reminds Judah in verse 13 that God is with them. And God is with us when we put him first. For example, there are multiple passages we could read about this. One is Genesis 26 and 3. "Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and will bless you. For to you and to your offspring I will give all these fields, and I will establish the oath that I swore to Abraham your father." So Abraham put God first, and everything else fell into place. In verse 14, Haggai says that God sparked the enthusiasm of the people. God's Spirit encourages each one of us to follow him in the right way. And God's Spirit stirs us up to do the right thing. And God's Spirit rouses us to go in the correct direction. Like Ezra says in Ezra 1:1, we just read this already. where it talks about God stirred up Cyrus of Persia to allow the Jews to return to their promised land. So God's Spirit rouses us and points us in the right direction. In the second chapter, the second lecture is the first 9 verses of the second chapter. Let's look at a few of those. In the 7th month, on the 21st day of the month, the word of the Lord came by the hand of Haggai the prophet. Speak now to Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, the high priest, and to all the remnant of the people, and say, who is left among you who saw this house in its former glory? How do you see it now? It is not as nothing in your eyes? Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel, declares the Lord. Be strong, O Joshua, son of Jazok the priest. Be strong, all the people of the land, declares the Lord. Work, for I am with you, declares the Lord. According to the covenant that I made with you when you came out of Egypt, my spirit remains in your midst. Fear not. So he's reminding them of the promises that he made to them long ago. He encourages them. A few of the people still remembered the first temple, and they seem to have been a little discouraged, some of the very old people, because this new temple was not looking as nice as that first temple. But he's saying, don't be discouraged. God is with you. The rebuilt temple would be good. But Haggai says to be strong and courageous. He says, work, because God is with them. God has given each of us work to do for his kingdom, and we are to work and not be discouraged because God is with each one of us. God had made a covenant with the Judeans, thus God's Spirit remains with them. So fear not. That is, another way you could read it is stop being afraid. Don't stop being afraid and work on the temple, and all will go well because I am with you. God has chosen to do his work through us, and here he is doing his work through the Jews in Judea as they rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. And I need to ask myself, am I available to do God's work in the world today? Haggai's third lecture begins with verse 10. And in verse 10, this is the 24th day of the 9th month of the reign of Darius the First, in his second year. Thus said the Lord of hosts, ask the priests about the law. And then he goes on and discusses some various points about the law, which I won't read. But the basic result is about holiness, that holiness is not transferable from one person to another, but contamination is transferable. We could be influenced by others, but generally holiness is not transferable. God wants obedience from his people. In 15 to 19, he says, but then consider from this day onward, before stone was placed upon stone in the temple of the Lord, how did you fare? When one camp to heap of 20 measures, there were but 10. When one came to the wine vat to draw 50 measures, there were but 20. I struck you and all the products of your toil with blight and with mildew and with hail, but yet you did not turn to me, declares the Lord. Consider from this day onward, from the 24th day of the 9th month, since the day that the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid, is a seed yet in the barn? Indeed, the vine, the fig, the pomegranate, and the olive tree have yielded nothing, but from this day on I will bless you. Once again, we know the exact date, this is occurring in December, and in the promised land, in that area around Jerusalem. 2 months have now elapsed since Haggai's second lecture, the winter crops have been planted in November and early December, and they planted things like wheat and barley and sesame and millet and lentils and garden vegetables. there had been a rain. Usually there was a rain, you know, in November. And then the rain would return, you know, from January to early March. So they would plant in between those two rainy seasons. And they were in the middle of this period where they had just finished planting and they were waiting for this next rain. And Haggai, during this period, when they're waiting for the plants to start coming up, and he's telling them that you are now placing God first and you're going to be blessed with a great harvest as a result of you placing the things in your life in the correct order. Haggai's final and fourth lecture is in the second chapter, the 20 to the 23rd verse. And it's on the same day as the third lecture, which we just talked about briefly. And it's addressed specifically to Zerubbabel, the governor of Judah. This is the only one that he addresses specifically to the leader of Judah. He says in verse 21, "Speak to Zerubbabel, governor of Judah, saying, I am about to shake the heavens and earth and to overthrow the throne of kingdoms. I am about to destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the nations and overthrow the chariots and their riders, and the horses and their riders shall go down, every one by the sword of his brother. On that day, declares the Lord of hosts, I will take you, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, declares the Lord, and make you light like a signet ring, for I have chosen you, declares the Lord of hosts." So this is specifically addressed to the leader of Judah. It describes him as he will be like a signet ring. A signet ring was used to guarantee the authority and authenticity of a letter. It's typically pressed into wax to authenticate it like a signature. Or it might be pressed into clay. God is reaffirming and guaranteeing his promise of a Messiah through David, is my interpretation of this. Zerubbabel is in the lineage of Jesus, Matthew 1 and 12. And after the deportation to Babylon, Jehoiada was the father of Shealtiel, and Shealtiel the father of Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel was chosen as each of us have been chosen by God. It is important for each of us to remember that we have been chosen by God. So, in review, what we've seen here in Haggai is Haggai's message to the people attempted to motivate the people to finish rebuilding the temple. That was the fundamental message, and he had great success. Great success. They responded immediately. There was this little 23-day delay, but we may have determined, you know, what the reason for that was. But they responded basically immediately. And he also reminded them that the Spirit of God was with them and would continue to be with them as long as they placed him in first place. He also encouraged them to stop putting their personal comfort as their top priority. Rather, God should have that first place in their lives and in each of our lives. And he promises us his strength. He promises us his guidance when we place him first. When we place him first, everything else falls into place. Of course, things are not perfect, but everything goes better overall. And that is the basic message of this short little book of Haggai. If there's anyone who would like to come forward at this time, please do so as we stand and sing this closing song.